Well, anyway, here we go to part of the Navy. And I have Professor Phil Mason from Wayne State University. Phil, whatever you feel.
Fine. Last time in our first interview, Tony, that you talked about your early life and career, and you brought us up to the background of World War II. And you had indicated your experience you'd had working with the Army and the newspapers in different projects relating to the war. 1942. What happened to you?
Well, in 1942, I enlisted in the Navy. Knowing the assignments I did for the military and the War Department and for press radio service and Gulf Photo, since it was near the war, most of my assignments dealt with the military in Detroit. And the Navy was one of the biggest projects that we had in Detroit. So I had a lot of assignments that I've covered. I became so interested in the Navy, and I enlisted in the Navy. So this one brought me in part of the Navy because of people I knew in the Navy. It was telling their needs for a photographer in the Navy, which I wanted to be, continue on my career in taking pictures. So I had that opportunity to be a second-class photographer's mate in the Navy.
Why Detroit, though? Step back a minute. Most people think of Detroit as the middle of America. Why would the Navy have a presence in Detroit?
Their headquarters was in the federal building, and since we had Gros Isle, a large naval air station, which became very important to the military because they trained all the British pilots here, the only place in the United States. So after my basic training in Great Lakes Naval Training Center in Illinois, I was sent to Gros Isle to start off the photo lab there and to build the department there and the photographic structure. After several months, I became promoted to a first-class photographer's mate by Lieutenant Brose, that we started to do three-dimensional photography and called the vectographs, which I think I explained earlier. Mm-hmm. The vectographs were a three-dimensional thing. We photographed the engine of a Navy fighter plane so the aviation machinist mates would know where to place the parts in the aviation. We did that with two-speed graphic cameras by moving the separation 2.5 inches. And we made a complete pamphlet brochure for the Navy, and where it was distributed. This way, when parts came to replace, they didn't have the engines. They could see the depths where the parts would belong in case they had to be sent overseas. Later was shipped back in 40, since I enlisted the Navy in the early part of 42. In 43, I was shipped over. I was sent to Dunkswell, England for a while. And then from there, I was sent to Port Leone, Northwest Africa. In Northwest Africa, during my stay there, after I replaced it used to be an ensign, Tim, was promoted, and I replaced him, and I was promoted to chief photographer's mate in Northwest Africa. There I started to build and did some three-dimensional work. Ensign Ruthven was another one who was very anxious about the vectographs there, so I did more type of vectography for them at the station at Port Leone, which was a big air base. It handled all of Moroccan sea frontier. It had fighter planes, bomber planes. They took care of all that. Our job also was to fit in the gun camera and the fighter planes. We had a automatic processing machine called the Houston processor. And all the stuff in that area that we had to cover for the Navy. One big project in the Navy also was that we had to do the invasion of southern France. And I sent two photographers to the groundwork at the invasion of southern France. One was Al Lawrence, who later became a photographer of the Detroit News, and Cole, both were first-class photographers mate. And I did the aerial mosaic map of the invasion that we had, intervalometers, an F-56 camera. We did the whole showing the placement of the ships, how they were going into the Navy. That map was immediately produced and given to the headquarters. Interesting enough, back in Port Leone, we had a life photographer that came there. We used our lab for the facilities. At that time, that was Margaret Burke White, was a life photographer. So we offered the facilities of our lab in North Africa for her because she was doing some military photography at the time. My interesting assignment was also is to do the troops, since Rome was declared an open city. Our officer decided, the commander of the station was G.T. Owen, decided that I should go with a Lieutenant Tunley to Rome to probably get pictures of the Americans entering Rome. We arrived in Naples, and they were still fighting at Cassino, Monte Cassino, and we couldn't get into Rome yet because the Germans were still there. So after 3 days that we were in Naples, we flew into the airport there, Ciampino Airport in Rome, and streets were sort of bare a little bit, you know. And I think I took off my markings that I was in the Navy because the troops haven't come in yet. There were no barracks for us to stay in, so we got in some apartment on Via Colina. I remember that very well. And one interesting thing, that evening when I was in there, I noticed somebody was coming into the room with a candle sneaking in, and I had my camera and flash bulb, and I flashed one in there, and this lady starts screaming down the aisle, "Tedeschi, Tedeschi," meaning Germans. Because she was really afraid, because normally she's afraid that we would shoot her or do something in that line. Mm-hmm. But apparently we forgot about the incident and we went on. I covered also, a few days later, the Americans decided to have their own little Olympics in Rome at the big stadium that Mussolini had built. Remember, you're supposed to have the Olympics there? So we had sort of our own little Olympics, whoever the troops that came into Rome. And I did quite a bit of pictures of that. And then after they returned back to Port Leone, I was sent then to England again, Dunkswell, England. Dunkswell. That was not far from London. And Lieutenant Ireland was in charge of the lab there. He was the lieutenant, and I was the chief photographer. And our job mainly was that to photograph the Navy portion, the Army crossing the Rhine River. So that's what we had to do. We took pictures of the Navy helping the Army cross the Rhine River. It was a very interesting thing. As a matter of fact, at times we had to wear Navy fatigues and clothes because they didn't want, when we were on the ground, they didn't want us to know that we were in the Navy. But to stay with the military, the Army at that time, we wore their clothing that they had. Many times we had to take our markings off, you know, and not to show that we are rank or whatever it was, only mainly a photographer.
Because this was the potential threat from the enemy and
yeah,
being
stuff
a target?
Like that. Mm-hmm. And stuff in that manner. It was a good idea to do it and not to show any difference if we were the Army or the Navy, you know, there's always that little feeling, but it was very interesting. One other thing, too, while I was there, during the surrender of Germany, I think this was around May 5th or 6th, I took a picture of two German generals surrendering in a black forest in Germany, and at that time, they surrendered. They came, in other words, what happened when he came to the Black Forest, they were under arrest, you know. You could see the MPs around, so I captured this scene with the MP, the two generals, and American general. What they do then, they took the two generals back to a certain headquarters to sign the thing, but the picture I got when he came into the Black Forest, which was at that time, you know, you're shooting these pictures and stuff, and became very interesting. And VE Day came. I was in London in VE Day. It was a huge celebration. Millions of people in Piccadilly Circus, around Buckingham Palace, all these squares, and signs say "Victory over Germany, 1945," and I moved around and captured all these type of pictures of people dancing on the street, and it was a great jubilation. But that was VE Day. Still, Japan was still at the other end. Came back to the United States on a first trip to Queen Mary made. I felt very honored. I met some of the people around the Queen Mary. Of course, we had staterooms because I was chief tar's mate. We had little extra facilities. So it was quite a trip when we came in and arrived back to the United States. And I was supposed to have had a 30-day leave. So when I came back home, that's when I met Frances. Even though she lived across the street from me, I never knew her too much, you know. And there we met and everything else. And before I left, we sort of, I asked her, you know, marriage and stuff. And we're sort of engaged a little bit. Mm-hmm. Not yet, but because I engaged later on. But we wrote. And
but she was a friend of your sister's all along.
Yeah, she was a friend of the sister's, and you know, I never knew her because during the time growing up, I never was around the house. She taking pictures or in school and that, but never noticed any of the neighbors in that end. But anyway, we wrote. I was shipped in on a slow ship going to Hawaii, see. So we went on the ship all the way back. And I got to Hawaii. My orders read to always report to the senior officer present. I don't know why, it's always the senior officer present. So when I got to these places, they didn't know what to do with me. What are you doing here? You know, stuff like that as well. Supposed to report to senior officer present, you're the senior officer, so. No new, wait for further orders. That was the deal of the Navy. I didn't know exactly what I was supposed to do, and no one else did either, because everything was always top secret, you know, what you're doing.
This was in the summer of 1945.
1945, going back there. And this was actually, when I got there, it was in August, and didn't know what was going to transpire. So finally, when it came near the date, we flew to Yokohama. Then from there, I had all my camera equipment. The commander of the fleet out there was a special part of the Navy. They wanted to do a little publication of the signing of the peace treaty. So I went out of Missouri. I didn't even know I was going out of Missouri. I don't know how I got on the ship because we went in, no one asked questions, no nothing. The only thing is that the orders was that I was to photograph Admiral Nimitz signing the peace treaty with the Navy people in the background. See, nothing else. That was my job to do. So when I got on the aboard ship, I think I arrived there only about, I'd say, no more than an hour before this thing happened. I didn't even know. So finally they placed me on the ramp on the side, and my job was the Navy was going to be on this side. Most of the other photographers were facing front for the world leaders, and I was on the left side facing the table and the military in the back. I had a speed graphic camera and about 8 holders and a Medalist camera. The Medalist was sort of a 620 camera, like a 120 camera. That's all I had. And at that time, we had to count your pictures, you know, 8 holders, that's 16 pictures only. And they wanted the 4x5 pictures. So I took a few others, but not many, because I wanted to be cautious to make sure that what my job was to photograph. See, that was the key thing. you can't shoot everything that moves. You have a specific thing to do, and that is your job. You got to make sure you cover it well. So the people were shooting. Nimitz came back. He had signed it, so I took these pictures of him with the Navy in the background and shot. The officer in charge of that right away picked up the holders because they had to go ahead and wherever they took this to the Fleet Air Command ship, they had to make this publication that the Navy was doing the peace treaty or whatever it was. So they hurried up, took the holders, and I think I had a few pictures on my medalist camera, so I pulled that out and they took it. And away they went. Well, the next time I saw was a publication that came out at the Navy, and of course there were other Navy photographers all around there too and shooting. So it became very interesting to go back. After, how we ever got off, I don't know, off the ship, back.
Who else were in the pictures, though, of the peace signing? You were assigned to give special attention to Admiral Nimitz, but who else was there that at the time that you image you captured?
Well, many other photographers are there. Mm-hmm. Was some Navy photographers, some newspaper, magazine photographers, but they were all around. Mm-hmm. See, I was on a ramp on the, that would be facing the ship, if you look at it, would be on the starboard side. See, I was on the starboard side of the ship. And my job was a profile of Nimitz, since the Navy brass was lined up against the port side. See, so this is the job that I had to shoot. It wasn't the best position on board ship anyway, because most of them were on the other end, shooting head-on with all the world leaders in the background.
Who were some of the other key figures there, like world leaders, Army?
All of them, I can't remember, but David Duncan was a life photographer. I remember him aboard ship. He was there not far from where I was standing. And since I came in so late and moved in, you didn't have time to talk who was there or some of the other people.
Right. But of the people that you photographed, General MacArthur would have been there?
Oh, I got in the picture, General MacArthur. You have all the key, Sherman, Admiral Sherman, all the people that are in the picture that I have. They're on the side. Mm-hmm. They're profiled and shooting back into the end, which came, as a matter of fact, the... as I remember, Truman liked that picture a lot, and they used it, and that's a picture that's been used quite a bit.
Right.
And the Navy fellow by who has some type of the Navy archives has always been calling me, and he says, we're looking for the guy who shot the picture. I said, well, that's there, and that's the picture. I said, but as Navy goes, all these pictures are in the Navy archives. I says, I have prints of it, yes, but they belong probably to the Navy. Everything you had in the Navy belongs to the Navy. There are pictures that I do have that I made, some prints that I kept a lot. I have, I'd say, different things over about several hundred 8x10 pictures that I have during things of the Navy. How I got off the ship.
Before you leave getting off the ship, how would you describe the atmosphere that day when the treaty was signed? Was it one of jubilation?
But it really was a fiasco, really. Everybody, you know, wanted to be barred. The control, I don't know. People, yeah, newspaper people, military people, world leaders had their own people. Everything was sort of a little bit of a... Finally, they got some kind of orders that everything was set aside, but I don't think they even knew who was aboard ship at the time because they'd been coming on. The Navy had people from other ships come over. The world leaders had other people coming over. You know one of these things, how they happen. But finally, it got pretty well organized. But it was, at the beginning, a little of a hectic situation.
How did you feel personally about being assigned to this?
Nothing at all, really.
Historic event that you were that you were...
You don't think of these things as big historic events. You're photographing, being chief photographer. To me, it was another thing. You never would realize that this was a great historic event, honestly. And I don't think anyone else realized what they were doing. It was historic, the signing of a peace treaty, but later on, I'd say, even though when I came back years after, I never thought of this, never even gave it a thought, all my years to the paper, nothing at all, because it was your interest. The prime interest was for me to get discharged, get out of the Navy. I had my job, I had 4 years in the service. How do I get out? I had so many points, you know, and that was a key thing. So you got off the ship and back, and I got back to Hawaii, and from there I went aboard ship back to White Plains, New York, where in December 15th, 1945, I finally got discharged. I was happy to get out because, you know, you want to get back to civilian life, and I had plans to get engaged. You know, you want to get married, and you're excited for over that thing. That was your key thing, you know.
Yeah.
These other things are running your mind. But coming back, got engaged before Christmas, and I got married March 2nd, 1945. Got married, and really, I enlisted the Naval Reserve when I got out. I stayed in the Naval Reserve, which was a good thing to do, is to be in a reserve. So after marriage, I took it easy, couldn't get a car. Couldn't find a car. Cars were very scarce to get, everything else. So looking for a used car. It was just amazing. Finally, I got an old clunker. Only car I could buy, a used car. So I finally got that. The car I had before I went into service were all sold and gone. I think my brothers had taken the cars. So I had no car. After I got married, I bought this car. We moved on the east side of Detroit, and I had this offer to go to the Chicago Tribune with Tom Johnson, who was my first class photographer's mate in North Africa. And I was anticipating, you know, should I go to Chicago? Should I go that? And still being a Detroiter, I really didn't have that strong urge. I didn't move that fast. Frances, after we got married, was still a secretary at the Ford Motor Company. And asked, what are you going to do? I said, well, I don't know yet what I'm going to do. I'm not decided exactly, because the move, once you make a move, you stay with it. So one day I got up and I said, look, I'm going to go see Dale Stafford and Janicki, the Associated Press, who was doing a lot of, I was a stringer for them while I was in college and before the war, doing a lot of photography for AP, Associated Press, and Wide World. So I said, I'm going to go over and see Dale Stafford or Janicki, because I kept track with them, writing to them when I was in the Navy, and they would write back to me, really. And it was quite an encouragement. Just tell them my different experiences in the Navy. They were all very happy. So I walked over to the car and went over to the Associated Press office, which was in the Detroit News Building at the time. Walked there, and the place looked familiar, hadn't changed. Same place I remember bringing my stuff at. And I asked for Dale Stafford. I says, Dale Stafford, you know, or Janicki. Well, Janicki is here. So I talked to him. Oh, yes, we talked very well. And I wrote to Janicki very well, too, a very good friend of mine. And I says, you know, I came here to say hello and say hello to Dale. Oh, he says, he's not here anymore. I said, what? He's not here? Well, where'd he go? He says he's managing editor of the Detroit Free Press.
Oh.
So I think I'll walk over and say hello to him anyway. So I talked to Jan, and he smiled. He said, well, he'll put you to work there. So I don't know. So I walked over to see Dale Stafford. Walked in there in his office. Third floor, and you got out of the elevator, his office was right there. Oh, he was happy to see me. He sat down in your office and they greeted, and how you been? I said, well, I just got married. Got married about a month ago. And I says, so what are you doing? I said, well, I'm doing nothing. I'm just thinking what I'm going to do. I says, I'm still going to go in newspapering. I think I'm going to go as a photographer. I have an offer, I said, to the Chicago Tribune, and I don't know yet if I'm going. He kept looking back, you know, Dale was a big guy, so back, he kept looking at me, you know, serious face. He said, what are you doing now? I said, I'm not doing anything. I said, I'm just taking it easy, thinking what I'm going to do. You know, you're working for me right now. That's what he means. You're working for me right now. I want you at the Free Press. Back in a payroll. So going up to the photo department, Tom, you're hired. So that's how I started the Free Press. And the next morning, I got my first assignment right away, right off the bat. I had my own equipment, didn't even have camera, so I had my own speed graphic. And at that time, it was sort of tough to get started. The newspaper photographers had click like they were all their own group, you know. They didn't want anyone strange to come in. None of them were military photographers. They were all there during the war. And here I came in from the military, and I had a different approach to everything, seeing how they were working. I didn't have the freedom as they would have when they were working, because my jobs, every picture I had to take, it was very important to take. So, as soon as I got in, the picture editor came up, gave me an assignment right away. And here's a job for you to go on. You know, I hadn't even seen a dark room, nothing. And you got your camera? I said, yeah, I have a camera. I said, but they said, we'll get you one later. I said, but I got one now. So I took my first assignment and went out, came back. Home with a dark room where I looked at it, and they were all amazed that they came back and had their prints. The difference there was that we would develop the 4x5 negatives. We would put them and print them wet. They had horizontal enlargers, so the water would drip down. So you put them in your holder, slip it in the enlarger. The enlarger would move on the track back and forth. The easel was posted on the board. You clip the paper to hold it up. So you print wet back, make your exposure, and develop it in a tray. And they print wet and gone, then take the negative, put it back in the water, and then the evening they'd hang them up. But it came very interesting, mm-hmm. all the way through starting. It was a tough start. It wasn't easy, because breaking in to that particular point, and I think Dale Stafford kept an eye on me at the time, because he knew basically how it is to break into this elite group of press photographers. You know how they are. They don't never give you any tips or what to do. There it is, there, do it. You had to do it on your own. And it started off very well. Finally, I proved the situation that I knew what I was doing and I could handle any type of problem that came out. I would say the first week or 2 weeks was sort of a little rough. Mm-hmm. At that time, we worked 6 days a week, about 8 hours a day, and going in the morning, rotating, doing your assignments at your job, working with people at the Free Press. Dale Stafford would always keep an eye on what I was doing. He'd see pictures in a paper. I had my first big layout in the back page of the paper, the Free Press, on the fall season. And they didn't run any credit line on that picture. in the back page. And Dale Staver came up to me. He says, "Who did that? Was that back page, was that your back page?" I said, "Yeah," because I could tell. So I wonder why they didn't run any byline on it. But I could tell that was your page. So from that time on, most of the pictures I had, they made sure that I had a credit on. I think Dale must have really got us on situations.
Do you remember what your first assignment was?
I can't remember. I had, at that time, I think I was giving the jobs that the other photographers didn't want to do. We had, I think, if I remember right, the spelling bee contest the Free Press had, and the kids. So I would be covering those sort of things. Mm-hmm. I covered a lot of women's photographers, parties at the nighttime, things in that line. You know, the photographers, mm-hmm. yeah. new jobs were a little off, but I did cover a pretty big, got an assignment one day, and I said, well, I decided to go riding at nighttime in a police car, you know. So I decided to write, I remember this very clearly. So I got to go in the police car, which was my own. At that time, too, to generate these assignments, you had to be a self-starter to think of different ideas to do. So I decided I like to do this. Lenny Knight at that time was our picture editor. He was the son of the publisher of the newspaper of John S. Knight, the Lenny Knight. And he was working there as a picture editor. And I talked to him on what I wanted to do. He says, "Great, do it." So we covered this assignment, which will probably be in the book anyway. Policeman in the car, family trouble. Oh, family trouble. We got in the car and everything else. Policemen get out. So I will follow them into this house, and they were things and throwing around in the house. Finally, the policeman calmed them down. You know, everything was fine. I didn't take any pictures because there was nothing to shoot there. They came out. So I came outside after. Then the policemen were coming outside. All at once, this guy came dashing out of the house and starts fighting with the policeman. He hit the first blow, broke his nose and everything else, and saw this. I moved back. Then the lady was a common law wife, as we found out. She kept running out of the house. After the policeman subdued the man, she came out and wanted to pull his eyes out. So I grabbed this shot, you know, as he's out there trying to get his eyes and everything else. The other car went for help and finally took it out. This shows you what the call for family trouble, how difficult it was. Picture ran on big in the back page, Lanny ran on the whole back page. We called it Blessed as the Peacemaker. And this was my first big prize that I won at the Free Press. Won first prize in the news category, Spot News. We're talking about 1947. Mm-hmm. And it became, when they announced this, they put the picture way back, buried it in the page, back page somewhere. First prize news. Dale Staver was upset. So what did he call him back? Why did he buried this thing back? Because here I was a new photographer back in there. All the rest of them were old timers from the war. And it's probably the prize that came out there, and he was upset where it was put in there. But it came going through from that time. I began to cover, from this thing broke the ice, I've been covering different types of assignments. I've been getting a little bit more in covering assignments, getting a little bit more recognition. There were Dale Davis was also the feature editor, who also wanted me, certain things would come up. Dale Staver then left the paper fellow by the name of Lee Hills came in from Miami. It's 1950. So Lee Hills came in from Miami, and he came in there, talked. He saw my work in the Free Press. He says, "I know you from the paper, Lee Hills." And we talked. Frank Angelo then was feature editor of the Free Press. Mm-hmm. Became to be a feature editor. So Lee Hills was very pleased. He knew of my work and kept tabs on me a little bit. And the first political convention that came out, 1952, Bruce Campbell was the city editor at the time. Frank Angelo was still the feature editor, but Bruce Campbell was a city editor, and he was really the a city editor's big job. He says, "I want you to go to the Democratic convention in Chicago." Never, you know, first time the Free Press was staffing a photographically an out-of-town assignment. Really. Convention. They never covered a political convention before photographically. So John Knight, the Knight Bureau, was going, and since I went to Chicago, John Knight called. He says, "You're coming with me." We covered the Pearl Mesta party. Have you ever heard of Pearl Mesta?
Yes.
We went to cover the thing, and we did quite a different jobs, and I got some very good exclusive mm-hmm. pictures at the time at the convention. I covered, remember, for all the night newspapers, not only for the Free Press, I covered for all night newspapers, and did such a great job that they liked all the papers, they liked what I did. Philadelphia, Miami, and all of them, that went for the Republican convention too. And Chicago was held same there in Chicago, a little later. I remember that very clear because I remember in Chicago, the triumphant entry at that time MacArthur made. Mm-hmm. He came to the convention, and I got him in a crowd as he walked in, and there. All that from the crowd, and I was stuck in the crowd, and Free Press ran quite a bit of pictures when it came in. Naturally, the fellow who came out on top was Dwight Eisenhower at the convention. And at that time, I made a pretty good step forward in covering political conventions. Used a 4x5 speed graphic camera, all the pictures I have, all pretty good and exclusive. I met a lot of Michigan people. I covered the Michigan delegation. Soapy Williams, you know, was one of them. Met quite a number. Walter Luther, all these people at the Democratic convention. Everything worked out very well at the convention that I did. From that time on, I came back in 1952, I was made chief photographer of the Free Press. Lee Hills came in, and he says, "I want you to be chief photographer." So I got chief photographer. But I had one thing in mind. I said, "Look." At that time, Frank Angelo was, I think, was pushed up to managing editor at that time. I says, "If I become chief photographer, I need to do one thing. I want to tear down and build a new photo department. The department you have in there now is like back in the dark ages. You got one developing room, terrible, can't accommodate the thing. Lousy horizontal enlarges, the printing. It's not a," he says, "you do what you want to do. You got my okay to do what you want." So I says, "Fine." That's the first step I had to really redesign. Of course, since I had this experience in the Navy, I did the architectural joint. I had it going back to Cass Tech, came in so handy in making plans that In the Navy, I also designed some dock rooms aboard ship for people how to do them. It came in so handy, so I did. I designed and drew the plans of the photograph department at Free Press. We did phase at a time, the dock room. We moved stuff out, tore everything out. Made individual dock rooms, three photographer work at a time, five different developing rooms, one huge printing room with vertical enlargers, took all the old ones out, put them up where you would have. Still working on 4x5 at the time yet, because it was the time for 4x5 enlargers. The expense came through. I got all stainless steel sinks, different things, brought it up to date. That's the first time that anything was done to really design. But I had to make the plans and blueprints and everything else, because no one knew exactly what to do. Then ordering the stuff I had to do. This came, all this experience of ordering and things, experience in the Navy, and to order stuff going back. You remember when I worked in the drugstore, I knew how to order. Mm-hmm. We used to have supplies, you know. We have 4 or 5 bottles of different articles. When it came to the last two, I had to write down, reorder. I knew exactly how to do all this thing from you learned earlier from the Navy. Mm-hmm. All came back, and how to do this, how to design, how to order, how to get your supplies. All this thing from early experience really came in handy, because I didn't go and open books to find out how to do these things. I did them. Mm-hmm. They came back automatically on how to handle all the situations. So it came in very handy. It took me about, I would say, 3 months. Mm-hmm. To do the design, the work, to deal with the people, to bring in the supplies, to order supplies, 3 to 4 months. Finally, it was all designed, and Lee Hills came in, and Frank Angelo came in. They looked at the room. They were amazed and really proud that the Free Press now was back in the big league on the photographic end. So why don't we stop here for a while? Then we could continue on.
Just lift his hand up.
Oh. If I say stop, the air cut off.
And I'll look up the dates, and then we'll go back on.
Oh, okay.
So you want
okay?
me to say stop, or?
Or you can. You mean just to look up? On,
yeah, yeah.
I'm here.
I could just say stop for a while till I find it.
Yeah, if you want.
Okay, you could cut it up. Something is flying there.
Hmm?
Your papers are flying there.
Oh. What was that?
I hear the chimes, but I don't see them.
Right there. They're right there.
Oh, right directly in back of me. I was listening to it.
Are they bothering you, the chimes?
No, I don't think he's picking up.
I thought it was nice music.
No, I can barely hear them.
We could tie them.
I can barely hear them.
Okay. So you go ahead and ask me what you think you want is important to go ahead and put what you need in there.
You let us know when we're ready.
Anytime.
Oh, anytime.
Yeah.
Tony, it's obvious from your earlier conversation that one of your major responsibilities, major assignments with the Free Press, was the political scene. Nationally as well as in Michigan. Well, tell us about the first campaign, the 1948 campaign with Mr. Truman.
Well, actually with Truman, I didn't cover, I did cover his campaign, but I didn't cover the convention. Mm-hmm. But I covered Truman quite a bit. I covered Truman when he came here in 1948 to the city. I covered him when he came for the 250th anniversary of the city. And I think I have quite a number of pictures of all the presidents. I think President Truman came to Detroit more times than any other presidents. I mean, I photographed him quite a number of times. I got him with Governor Soapy Williams, with business leaders of the city. One interesting thing I got of Harry Truman, at that time I had a photon camera, sequence camera, that I would click, take pictures automatically as a sequence. When he visited at the old City Hall, he came out with Harry Truman. Remember that President Truman always wore a hat, because the haberdasher had a hat. Well, when he came out, I got a picture of him. Then his limousine was waiting. It was an open car. He sat down there and he looked amazed. Something bothered him. He whispered to the guy that he had forgotten his hat in the City Hall. And I heard that because I was close by, and then I started photographing. I got him in his hand thinking, and the guy brought his hat, and I got taking a picture of the guy giving the President Truman his hat. He thanked him very much, and all this went on, and all the series, so happy to get his hat. And what he did, he put it on and drove off. So I had a whole sequence that we ran quite a bit in a paper. And that was picked up nationally. Parade magazine ran it all over the country. Harry Truman forgot his hat. It was sort of a interesting series of pictures that had, because it showed President Truman in a different perspective, you know, not speaking at the mic and a candid things of him. And that's a series that I really enjoyed shooting. And all the other time Truman came, Labor Day was a big thing for Harry Truman, the city of Detroit. And Labor Day in those days, Phil, were Labor Days. Like today's Labor Days are...